Guess what day it is?
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
We should see if we can find out if this band still exists. Jake, who are they? The people singing this ridiculous song?
C2C.
And are they, what, Danish? They're from Mars? Where are they from?
I believe Venus.
They're not Americans, right?
I don't think
so. This is an international outreach by the Steve Cochran Show.
Yeah.
But we should get them on.
Every time you play it, their downloads go up on iTunes. Do you know that?
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. We're the only people supporting them. Their mothers aren't even supporting them anymore. C2C? Is that what C2C is? That what's called? I think that's it. Hi, everybody. I'm Steve, your radio friend.
I have some info for you, Steve.
Yes, go ahead, Jake.
Live from the producer booth?
Yes.
C2C. They're from Nantes, France?
Uh-huh. Yeah, me too.
Oui, oui. Oh, 1998, they became a band.
Okay.
And it says to present, so they're still around.
All right, I wonder if they speak English. Let's see if we can get them on.
I think if you indeed do your French accents and just talk to them that way, I think they'll understand.
Probably. What if it turns out they're the ones that stole Kim Kardashian's jewelry? That would be a problem. But what if we get them on and then they want to get paid every morning that we play their song? See, that's a problem, too.
Yeah, that's not good.
I mean, they get a rights kick, right? Don't we pay for...
I think so, yeah.
I think we paid a licensing for that.
Yeah, it was a licensing fee.
We've been taken out of the Mary Vandevelde's check, so...
It is 6:14. Who's in Mary Vandevelde's chair today?
It's Jen DeSalvo again. Good morning.
Good morning, Jen DeSalvo. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Nice to see you. What happened yesterday? Was it something I said on Monday you decided not to come in yesterday?
Totally. It was
okay, just checking.
All right,
cool. That makes sense.
Are you surprised by that, Steve?
Not so much. Not so much. I'm disappointed in me, as all of you are. And Dave, do we need to break up the Las Vegas Golden Knights?
They're pretty good. Now,
they beat the Blackhawks last night.
They're the first team, not just expansion teams, the first team ever to start 7-1 in the 100-year history of the National Hockey League.
What do you mean, first team to start 7-1?
No team has ever started in their first season.
Oh, first season. Got it.
First
got it,
season,
got it,
7-1.
Got it.
Yeah, no, I don't mean like.
First year.
First year.
First year as a team, they're 7-1. Yes. Nobody's ever been better.
No one has ever done that before.
Where are they playing? Where are they playing their games? Is it Caesars?
It's the T-Mobile.
Caesars in one of the showcase rooms?
No, it's the T-Mobile Arena. I'm not sure exactly where it is. But did you see all of the I mean, it was had to be like 80 or 90% Blackhawks fans in there last night. It was crazy.
Yeah. Well, it's the Vegas, Chicago, right?
Yeah.
Frank started that a long time ago.
Yes.
And we continue the tradition. We have our top 6 at 6 coming up. The Republican Party is at a crossroads. My media friends are already letting this story go, which is unfortunate. I'll beat it into the ground today as two prominent senators stand up against the president yesterday. But we'll get to that. And also, hey, golf fans, sure, it may be 12 degrees in Chicago, but John Feinstein will be here this morning to talk about the first major, the inside story of the 2016 Ryder Cup, where the United States, you may remember, went to Minneapolis and won. So, but it's a cool book. It's a lot of intrigue, a lot of backstory. And Feinstein's a great writer, as most of you know. So we'll get to that.
He can take an event like that and just dissect it to a point where it's a really
reads like a movie
book. Yeah.
Yeah.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks. Get your kicks.
Get your kicks. With the top 6 at 6. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60 Minute Man.
All right, at 6:22, we continue with the top 6 at 6. By the way, yesterday on the show, we had a pretty remarkable segment, I would say. Maureen Ryan, former TV critic for the Tribune, was on. She was talking about being sexually harassed in Hollywood. Mary Sandberg Boyle talked about her own very personal story about what happened, very publicly talked about it, and again, give her credit for that. But anyway, it's pretty cool to listen to on the podcast, I think, as these stories continue to roll out. Oh, this creep James Toback that Dean and I were talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Over 200 women have come forward now. 200 have come forward talking about this creep. Legislatures, the state houses across the country, including in Springfield, women are stepping up and saying, oh, yeah, it's been happening here forever. Yeah. So this story far from over. All right. First up, Senator Jeff Flake and Senator Bob Corker both are leaving the Senate, but not until January of 2019. Yesterday, they made history. The question is, how long will the history last? When Corker did interview after interview after interview, talking about what a danger and what an embarrassment President Trump is, what a liar he is, over and over again. Trump, meanwhile, had lunch up on the Hill, as it's called, in Congress, and came back. And as he came back from this lunch, when he was trying to talk about his tax plan, Jeff Flake stepped to the floor in the Senate and said some amazing things, slamming Trump, saying, we have children and grandchildren. Winner, what are we going to say to them? What are they going to say to us about responsibility? We'll play a bunch of sound from that coming up, but one of the quotes, reckless, outrageous, and undignified behavior has become excused and countenanced as telling it like it is, when actually it's just reckless, outrageous, and undignified. And when such behavior emanates from the top of our government, it's something else. It's dangerous to a democracy. You've been hearing that sermon here forever. You need to hear it more from the people in the Senate. Because, you know, Dave, here's the thing. Mm-hmm. I don't understand what is so great about the job in Congress that you would want to throw your dignity out the window along with the hope for the future of your children and grandchildren and the bills they'll have to pay and the damage that's being done right now in this country. What is so great about this job that you will hide like a coward, whether you're Democrat or Republican, and allow this to continue to happen? I don't get it.
Good point.
The money ain't that good. It's a nice living.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe it's all the extra money.
Well, but there's a pretty good ability to watch that. Sure, a lot of them are millionaires, but not some of that money came in with them. But the power and what, you want a nice table at a steakhouse in Georgetown? Yeah, you know, there's lots of ways to get that. I don't get what this job to me appears to be less desirable by the day. And for Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell and Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, shame on all four of you. Because you're all blowing it.
But, you know, that's a problem, Steve, the fact that it looks less appealing.
Oh, it's a huge problem.
You need people there.
Yeah, yeah. Good people who would otherwise run are no longer don't want anything to do with it.
And
running the other way.
And all of Congress is counting on a presumption of apathy. And that is that none of us are going to go out and vote in any of these primaries. So, therefore, the people that make the rules and benefit from the rules get to stay in power for as long as possible. See Mike Madigan. Next, Hillary Clinton's back in the news. I told Hillary Clinton, stay in a tree fort. Stay in a tree fort. Don't take any calls. Matter of fact, disconnect your phone. Cut the cord. Watch a little Hulu. Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign, the DNC, apparently paid for research that was included in the famous Russian dossier, containing all sorts of salacious claims about connections between Donald Trump, his associates, and Russia. The words hookers and urination are in this dossier. The claims have not been validated, though they are from a man named Christopher Steele, a very well-regarded former member of the British intelligence agency. Is it M6? MI6?
MI5.
MI5.
Close.
I was in the neighborhood. But the fact of the matter is the dossier may have been paid for as opposition research, but the tie that's attempting to be made overnight, and it'll be made again today, that this is why Mueller is investigating. No, let me just remind everybody. The Mueller investigation was impaneled and empowered by the Attorney General's office, the Attorney General of the United States of America, under the President of the United States, Rod Rosenstein, the acting Attorney General, appointed Bob Mueller. When Bob Mueller's findings are complete, he will report them to Rod Rosenstein. That's when we will or won't hear about whatever Mueller came up with. There's nothing to do with the dossier. The dossier is part of the investigation, but it has nothing to do with Hillary Clinton and the DNC. Nice try.
There's one important fact that's being left out of the reporting on this dossier story. The GOP initially started paying for this in the primary part of the campaign last year.
Mm-hmm.
The Democrats then picked it up in the fall campaign.
There you go. So. Tweet this morning, the Clinton campaign and DNC paid for research that led to the anti-Trump fake news dossier. The victim here is the president. That's being written by the president. I have almost as much sympathy as I have for Bill O'Reilly when he says he's mad at God. Next, President Trump allowed the resumption of refugee admission into the U.S. under new, stricter screening rules that ordered nationals from 11 countries believed to pose higher risk to the U.S. national security to face even tougher security. What this amounts to is refugees will continue to be allowed in. The vetting will be more significant. And this is a good news story. The school year started yesterday in Puerto Rico, but three-quarters of the island still lacks power. This is now the longest blackout of any U.S. state, territory, or governed by the U.S. in any way, shape, or form, area of the world, ever, ever, ever. As long as there's been electricity, none of our properties or things under our control or governance has ever been without power this long. 98 of the island's public schools reopened on Tuesday, 9% of the total, and the ones that did were in San Juan and Mayagüez, two major cities. Another 112 in those areas will open as soon as their final paperwork is in. Few, if any, of the reopened schools have generators or internet access or air conditioning, for that matter. School days right now are half days, at least for now, and the students have to bring their own water bottles and douse themselves in repellent to fend off a mosquito invasion like they've never seen on the island, which, of course, brings
imagine.
Other disease. Yeah. Then there's this plan. A plan has been unveiled for what could be the sixth tallest skyscraper in the city of Chicago. A Chicago developer unveiled drawings for that in the third tallest north of the Chicago River to be built on what's now a parking lot from across from State Street and the Holy Name Cathedral. The condo and apartment tower could rise as high as 1,011 feet. I know that parking lot. I've parked in that parking lot.
I have, too.
And Holy Name right there, you would say, well, it blocks the view of Holy Name, but the view out the front door of Holy Name is the parking lot. So, you know, it is what it is, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So we'll see where that goes. And then there's this. Jamie Oliver, celebrity chef who started the Jamie Food Foundation promoting healthy eating among kids, has come out against school bake sales. He says they undermine a healthy eating message. I think you got to let a kid have a brownie. I think you got to let a kid have a cookie.
Look, you know me as far as healthy eating.
Yeah.
I'm a big proponent. But just because you have a bake sale, that doesn't mean you have to eat everything
right in
the bake sale.
Right.
Right.
Everything in moderation, including the crap your kid is selling.
That's right.
Right. It's 6:30. That is your top six at six. And, of course, as always, it's sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men. Mike Jacobson is insisting I give away one of these weather stations because he's a big fan. The sixth caller gets a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling. The 60 Minute Men number is 312-981-7200. The big story's next.
Please rise. Court is now in session.
Karen Conti, Sunday nights of the Noonan Show, here on 720 WGN. There's a new email for callers and listeners of the program that Karen would love to hear from you at. It's WGN@AskKarenConti.com. Again, WGN@AskKarenConti.com. As Karen joins us now, and good morning to you.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good. I'm doing well.
All right, good. Everything fine at Conti Law?
Everything is great. Busy, busy, busy.
312-332-7800 is your number there. All right. So the problem of sexual harassment in the workplace has been blowed up real good here to the point where everybody's talking about it. You have women who as a group are going, mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore. And it's about time. How to fix it is another problem. We'll get to that general discussion in a second, but I'm sure you've dealt with this, right?
I have in so many ways. I've dealt with it as an attorney, a young attorney mostly, and I've dealt with it from a litigation standpoint, and I've done it from both defense standpoint and plaintiff standpoint. So I've seen the devastation it does in the workplace, the devastation it does to people, and it just continues, and it's still baffling to me that people are continuing to do it. But, you know, Steve, the psychology of it really needs to be understood because it really has nothing to do about dating and sex and all of that. It's not about romance. This is about dominance and control. And people who do it largely are feeling insecure in the workplace and resent women in the workplace and are trying to make them feel bad. So if we approach it from that standpoint and understand that, I think we'll all have a better grasp on how to stop it.
Here's the thing that is troubling for so many people is whose responsibility is it? Because the great thing about the Me Too hashtag and the push from Me Too is it's very therapeutic to allow women to finally collectively get together and talk about it. And anybody who wants to judge women about why they haven't talked about it before, well, walk a mile in their shoes, and I think you'll understand. We as men certainly need to do more. We need to self-police. But what do the workplaces need to do, and what's the legal responsibility of the workplaces that they're, you know, maybe not doing now?
Well, obviously, you're posting all the avenues that people have to report it. You know, you always see that in the lunch place. If you are sexually harassed, this is what sexual harassment is. This is how you report it. This is what is going to happen. And that's very important. But I just think we need to just be a little more specific because many of the people who are guilty of harassment, really, if you ask them, are you harassing someone? They deny it because they don't understand it. And there's little things, Steve, like staring. I think women out there can, you know, I'd say men too. Men get harassed as well. But what we have is we have people who are staring at us. You know, why are you staring so much? And that's one of the biggest concerns that women have in the workplace. He's looking at me. Jokes, you know, just jokes about women. Interrupting women in the workplace, too many compliments, you know, 5 compliments a day from somebody. That's not trying to get somebody into a date. That's intimidation. And so those are the types of things that need to be identified. And maybe we need a few seminars to explain to people what that really means.
So these seminars, which I know a lot of places responsibly hold, do they absolve workplaces of responsibility legally going forward?
No, I don't think it necessarily absolves the workplace. I think it prevents lawsuits. I think those things are very good for corporations to make that, you know, make people aware. And then also make women feel comfortable in coming forward. I think those things are really good. But no, a workplace, once there is a complaint, they have to investigate it. And that's their obligation. They must do it. They usually put everybody on a paid leave, and they ask people, and they ask if anyone else is harassed. A full investigation, sometimes even bringing in a third party to conduct that investigation. And then if there's a finding that there has been some sort of sexual harassment, then there's a remedy. There's either the person is fired or he's given a warning or there's some other remedy. So that's the workplace's responsibility, and they generally do their job.
The HR departments that ought to be the safe haven that anybody can go to in any larger company, all self-governed, or is there some standard they have to apply to?
There's a protocol. I mean, if someone reports sexual harassment, HR people are schooled and trained in how to do these investigations and how to treat everybody. So, this happens in smaller companies too that don't have HR departments. You know, you see this in restaurants where it's family owned and there's no HR. So you're making your report to maybe the owner of the restaurant, who maybe has been conducting himself in a certain way for years without really realizing that it's offensive. So, again, it's nice to talk about HR, but a lot of people have jobs in these smaller venues where you don't have those avenues.
But is HR largely, even in bigger companies, it's not the right words for it, but for lack of a better way to put it, the honor system that the HR person will do what they were trained to do and respect the privacy of your complaint? Because, you know, I do hear from people that go, well, if I go to HR, I'm just going to get dragged into a meeting and I have to face my accuser and I'm uncomfortable with it. And then people stay silent.
Well, the human resources will have to investigate it. And there's really no way to keep it confidential who made the complaint, because HR has to go to the alleged offender and say, did you harass Jane Doe? You know, did you say this to Jane Doe? Did you take her out to lunch and ask her out on a date? So clearly the guy's going to know. And that's really, there's no other way to do it to get to
right,
the
right. But I'm talking about, I've heard people say, I don't want to be in a room with somebody. You know, the confrontational piece right from the get-go. Like, I'm going to put you in a room and me in a room. And you're going to sit there, and then I'm going to say, I never did this to you, and shout you down. Or, you know, the Bill O'Reilly move, the, you know, I'm louder than you and I have more attorneys.
Yeah, no, that generally does not happen. It's not supposed to happen. It's not supposed to be a confrontational process. It's supposed to be an investigative process. And that's the last thing you would ever do, is to put that person in the same room. I mean, do people mess it up and do it incorrectly? Probably. But that's just not that's not the protocol.
So I suppose if you go to your HR person with a specific complaint, you could make that request. Say, listen, I understand you have to tell the person I'm bringing this complaint, but I'm not going to go and sit in a room with them.
Sure, you can say that. And you should also ask what the procedure is. I'd like to know what you're going to do and how you're going to investigate this. And you might have some pointers to say, yes, I think there are three other women that were also harassed, and you might want to talk to them as well. You know, and women need to just keep track of what's going on. I mean, I'm not saying be a, you know, it's a full-time job. But, you know, if someone keeps emailing you or looking at you or staring at you or saying things to you, document it. Just put it in a place where you have some evidence that you're doing it on a contemporaneous basis. So it has some veracity. It has some, you know, pull when time comes. So, you know, you hate to have to put that burden on people, but that's what you have to do in order to get some remedy in the workplace.
Well, then we come back after the break here. I want to talk about that responsibility on both sides and definitions on both sides. Sexual harassment it shouldn't be in the eye of the beholder, because all of us know that your job and your condition of employment can't be revolving around whether or not you have sex with the person. But when does flirting become sexual harassment? And what do we need to tell men about how they behave? Is a wink a problem? That type of thing. And this isn't, that, you know, we're looking for answers here. This is an effort to try to get to some answers in the short term. So we'll talk more with Karen Conti. Back to Karen Conti again. There's an email. You could reach Karen at WGN at AskKarenConti.com. That's WGN at AskKarenConti.com. And she'll specifically know it's from us. And she'll get right on it. And she'll tell all of her clients, you're going to have to wait. That's how it works, isn't it, Karen?
That's exactly how it works.
Yeah. All right. So, listen, it's completely unfair to put this all on women. But consequently, or conversely, I should say, it's unfair to put this all on men as well. So if we go with basic human behavior here, and also with the notion that if you feel you have been sexually harassed, as we've discussed, in all likelihood you have. So you need to take it to the next level and go to your boss, go to your supervisor, go to your HR department, and move forward and not just let it lie there. But we live in a workplace situation now, especially this week and beyond, where I think men are a little confused. What do they do? So what do you tell men?
Well, I think the first thing I want to say is you should confront the person who's doing this first. And that does put a burden on women, because a lot of women are uncomfortable with saying, excuse me, but I didn't feel comfortable with that. I prefer that you stop that. You know, because that does end it quite a bit.
It should end it, period.
It should end a period, and people who want to intimidate and dominate, when they are confronted, they will back down. So that is really something that you should always do. But clearly, you know, there's this idea that there's this just, what is sexual harassment? If I flirt in the workplace, you know what? I think people who harass, you know what flirting is. You know, we all do that at the workplace. We maybe say something to a person who's a trusted confidant, and then there's no hard feelings. I mean, I've done that my whole life. I've been friendly with men and women in the workplace. But when it crosses the line, we all know when that crosses the line. We all know when that joke is not funny. We all know when that joke is directed personally at me, and you're doing that to push me into a corner. So I don't think it's as gray as we, you know, I hear a lot of men go, you know, what am I supposed to do? Do I not compliment? You know what you're doing. It's fine to compliment. It's fine to tell jokes. But when it makes someone feel uncomfortable, and there is a subjective element to it, it's not objective. It's what makes you feel that this is an unwelcome sexual advance. So, you report it. I think we should all be watching it. I think women should be cognizant of other women. I think that men should be wary. I think the jokes in the workplace, sometimes men will tell jokes, and, you know, that's all well and good, and that's the way life is. But you have to watch it, and you have to watch if you're telling those jokes in front of women, that may not be acceptable. So just being aware is my best advice.
And if you truly feel non-confrontational about this, you're certainly entitled to feel that way. But we talked about this yesterday when we had the segment on the air I was discussing earlier, Dave, the power of walking away. You know, a bunch of goofball guys standing around with a female or more than one female there, and you're saying inappropriate things that maybe aren't sexual harassment, but certainly aren't something that would be appealing to the crowd. And the power of women walking away is a bigger deal than people think, because then the guys realize, well, I'm an idiot. At least they should. And in my case, many have.
Well, there's a great example. It comes from some case law, but a woman was giving a speech in a boardroom, and she said something like, I'd like to discuss the assets of the company. And some guy chimed in and said, I'd like to discuss your assets. You know, so that is like a quintessential sexual harassment, because what was the purpose of that? It really wasn't funny. It was made to degrade and demean and to interrupt and to kind of belittle what she was about to say. I mean, how do you proceed from there when someone just said that?
Right.
That just took away your power. It took away your authority. And that's clearly sexual harassment. And some men might say, oh, that's just guys being guys. No, it isn't. So I think, you know, that's a good example. And keep that in mind in the workplace, that it's not the sex part of it. It's the power part of it.
You've said a million times on this show, don't immediately assume you're going to sue somebody. It's not the right way to go, and it's incredibly complex. It's incredibly costly. And because you're offended doesn't mean you were legally damaged, even though in some cases it feels like it should be very clear that you were. So is there a trigger point for a lawsuit in situations like this?
I tell people to avoid it, because what you want to do, number one, is to save your job and fix the workplace and make it right. And if that means that the guy's going to stop, if that means he has to be moved to a different place, or you have to be moved to a different place, I don't like that option. But that's save your job first, especially if you like your job. Filing a lawsuit is a long and tedious process. It keeps that discrimination and harassment going for 2 or 3 years while you litigate. It's expensive. It's iffy. And, you know, again, it's not good for your reputation. I have to say that. You have a right to bring a lawsuit, but if people know you have a lawsuit, it does impact people's view of you. So I would say try to fix it, but you do. You can go to the EEOC or the Illinois Department of Human Rights. You can make a claim. It doesn't cost anything. They investigate it, and they will come back, and they will try to help you resolve it. But, again, that's sort of the last resort.
Right. And we live in a world of free will. And if you really feel like you're in an untenable workplace, the time to start looking for another job, I guess, is today. It's not the ideal situation, but you need to protect yourself first.
And it's unfortunate, because so many women leave their jobs for that reason. And that's one of the reasons, if you look at the research, that shows that women, you know, don't always rise in the workplace as they should, because they're leaving jobs because men are harassing them. So, you know, it is unfortunate, but to me, you know, mental health, and if it's not going to be fixed in the workplace, you might have to decide to go somewhere else.
And I would just say to men who are listening this morning who engage in this kind of behavior, what you said, you know what you're doing, and you know why you're doing it, and you know you're wrong. And there's never been more heat on this situation than ever before. Knock it off, grow up, be a man, and stop it. Because you will be stopped, especially in this environment, and you should be. And for everybody that manages a workplace or owns a business, I hope you'll take a closer look at this week and going forward, because the time to stop is right now, like never before. Let's get after it and end the problem to the best of our ability.
Yeah, and it's the sister rule, Steve. Like treat her like you would treat your sister.
Right.
Would you say that to your sister? If you wouldn't, then don't say it to her.
It's Karen Conti. Again, the new email, WGN@AskKarenConti.com. Thank you.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
Back with the news next, 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
716, bunch of texters from the conversation with Karen Conti. If you're going to talk about sexual harassment, you need to avoid gender pronouns. Harassment can happen to both genders. I understand the males may be the majority offender, but they're not the only ones. At 815, regarding sexual harassment, I think if you wouldn't say it to your sister, don't say it to coworkers, a good guideline, followed by a joke that I won't do here. 630 texter, bad for women when our president is also the predator in chief. That's, by the way, the most ready example of how men should be policing men. And it's really easy to criticize Billy Bush now outside of the moment. But what Donald Trump said, again, for the 9 millionth time, is not typical locker room talk. Grab him by the P word is not something I had ever heard in my life.
Nope.
Along with the fact that, it's just something that as men you can go, what are you talking about? And not giggle at it. Let's see. What about women bosses that sexually harass? Obviously, that's a bad thing. Texter says 630, it's not locker room talk. 630, I'm in no way condoning sexual harassment in the workplace. These conversations always position men as the aggressors. Women can be the aggressors as well. 815, I'm an HR manager, and I never put the accuser and victim in the same room. Well, that's good to know. 847, can someone report for someone else if they witness harassment? Every situation I've ever heard of, the answer to that is yes. You can go to your HR department about anything. Say, I heard this, correct. I saw this, whatever the case may be. 312, women can also be accused of harassment. This is not just a women's issue from the 815, meaning men need to step up as well. What about asking someone out on a date from work? Is that harassment? That goes to that discussion we had where you go, look, you know what harassment is and what it isn't. Asking someone out on a date is not harassment. It's asking someone out on a date. However, if they say no and you stalk them, or if they say no and you continue to continue to badger them, well, then you've crossed the line. Common sense applies. The texts continue to come in at 312-981-7200. We'll get into deeper detail on the Jeff Flake, Bob Corker, Donald Trump scrum from yesterday because it's far from over. But for those of you who need to go to work and won't hear all the sound from yesterday, I wanted to play a couple of clips here. This is Bob Corker talking about Trump when Manu Raju from CNN asked him if he was a role model for our kids.
Do you think he's a role model to children in the United States?
No.
You don't?
No, absolutely not. I think that, you know, the things that are happening right now that are harmful to our nation, whether it's the breaking down of, we're going to be doing some hearings on some of the things that he purposely is breaking down relationships we have around the world that have been useful to our nation. But I think at the end of the day, when his term is over, I think the debasing of our nation, the constant non-truth telling, the name calling, the things like, I think the debasement of our nation will be what he'll be remembered most for, and that's regretful. And it affects young people. I mean, we have young people who, for the first time, are, you know, watching a president stating, absolute non-truths, non-stop, personalizing things in the way that he does. And it's very sad for our nation.
It's Bob Corker, a Republican and an influential one and a committee head, talking about the president of the United States and a member of his own party, at least in title. Donald Trump yesterday. And by the way, I've gone beyond tired of hearing untruths. They're lies. Call them what they are. They're lies. They're lies every day. Jeff Flake, the Arizona senator, in his amazing speech yesterday on the floor of the Senate on Trump. Listen.
It seems that our democracy is more defined by our discord and our dysfunction than by our own values and principles. Let me begin by noting a somewhat obvious point, that these offices that we hold are not ours indefinitely. We're not here simply to mark time. Sustained incumbency is certainly not the point of seeking office. And there are times when we must risk our careers in favor of our principles. Now is such a time.
Flake got a tepid round of applause from some Republicans. Great words from John McCain, no surprise there. But a lot of applause from Democrats at that point. But the Democrats don't get off the hook on this. The Democrats are just as cowardly as the Republicans have been. And again, protecting your job for what? What are you protecting? When the president of the United States is this kind of a disaster, what are you protecting? Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, on the Twitter dispute between Trump and Corker. Here's that.
Put this Twitter dispute aside. The fact is we have a historic chance of actually fixing this tax code, giving people pay raises, and getting the American economy growing at the rate where we can actually get bigger paychecks, more take-home pay, a healthier economy. That's what matters. So all this stuff you see on a daily basis on Twitter this and Twitter that, forget about it.
I'm not quite sure what Paul Ryan is afraid of. It'd be nice if Paul Ryan could get a win as well, but he's certainly not the guy I thought he was. Because it is news, and it is relevant, because Jeff Flake and Bob Corker, two votes the president desperately needs to get anything done, have now come out vehemently against him in the most obvious ways possible. So
they did side with him, though, last night on this consumer protection bill. Just hours after that Flake speech, he went onto the Senate floor last night and voted with the rest of the Republicans to roll back all of our protections for suing credit card companies like Equifax and class action status. So
wait, who did what? Who did this?
This was last night on the Senate floor. The Senate voted. It was 50 to 50.
Yeah, but you said you sided with him. Who did you side with?
He sided with the group that rolled back these protections.
He, Ryan.
He, Flake.
Oh, Jeff he, Flake. Flake. Yes. Got it.
Right. And Corker.
Okay, Flake and Corker sided with the rollback.
GOP and Wall Street, yep.
Yeah. Well, you know, and they may end up voting with Trump on many things, right? We don't know, but we certainly could use. We know this, Stephen. You know this. We know there are a slew of Republicans and Democrats who whisper things to reporters in the hallways of Congress but will never go on record about them. What are you protecting your job for again?
And what is it going to take to make that change? I don't know. I think we've seen, I mean, have we seen just about the worst possible stuff? I mean, what is it that could possibly move those people? That's what I keep asking myself.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
What could be worse than what we're seeing now?
And if Bob Mueller's report releases findings that are the worst case scenario that believed to be true, will that be enough to make any of them move?
And will anybody in America believe it after all of the, you know, fake news that's been out there? People do not trust the news media. About
the
half
claims of fake news.
Yeah, the claims of fake news, right?
Right. At 7:23, let's do traffic. Jen DeSalvo is in for, I'm sorry, Jen, I'm still trying to get used to your pronunciation.
It's okay.
And your sister called and said my sister's getting it wrong.
Oh, okay.
Jen DeSalvo is here with your traffic update in for Mary Vandeveld. And what do you have?
Well, the Tri-State Tollway northbound has been a little bit messy this morning. Near Cicero, there's a crash. The left lane is blocked. Authorities are on the scene. And then you're crawling all the way up to Western Springs, where an earlier crash northbound near the Hinsdale Oasis has just been cleared out of the way. Travel times on the Tri-State, 80 up to the Stevenson, 50 minutes. Then it's another 25 from the Stevenson up to the Jane Addams. And then over on the Edens, 26 from Lake Cook into the Junction. The outbound side, 32 minutes from Montrose to Lake Cook. Kennedy O'Hare into downtown in hour 4, 35 in from the Junction. 29 in those express lanes. The outbound side downtown to O'Hare is 42. Eisenhower, Thorndale into downtown, 55, 39 in from Wolf. Outbound Ike, 30 to Wolf, and then it's clear out to Thorndale. Stevenson, 355 to Lakeshore Drive, 56 minutes, 44 in from the Tri-State outbound side, 40 minutes to 355. Dan Ryan, 95th into the circle, just a 20-minute trip. Bishop Ford, it's 25 from 80 up to 95th, 57, 80 to the Bishop Ford, 27 minutes, slow from about 127th on in, and Lakeshore Drive northbound, Marquette to Hollywood, 32 minutes. For traffic on the 7s or 8s or anytime on demand, get the Traffic Chicago app approved by Team Hochberg at Pearl Mortgage. Just search TRAFFIX Chicago. I'm Jen DeSalvo in WGN Traffic Central.
Let's do this. The Hawks replay from last night, sponsored by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. Roll it.
A well-earned victory for the Vegas Golden Knights to beat the Blackhawks here tonight 4-2.
That's really all you need to know. When the Hawks lose, we don't spend a lot of time on this. When the Hawks win, we'll beat it into the ground. And that's why we spend much more time beating it into the ground. Mm-hmm. But, boy, you got to give Las Vegas credit. That's a good hockey team right now.
They were kind of set up to succeed early, which makes sense. And, they're 7-1.
Putting your third-string goalie, a guy that just happened to wear a sweater in the stands, and they pull him out of the stands to play, and he stops the Blackhawks.
I don't think he was just in the stands.
Oh, I don't know if he was on the roster. We'll come back and do the Hawker Riddle in just a second. Stand by to win tickets to Blackhawks the way you want them.
Be sure to check out the CB app or hit up Facebook and tell Chicago's Best where you'd like to eat. Watch Chicago's Best Sundays at 10 p.m. on WGN-TV. Your pick may be Chicago's Best.
Brian, thank you, Jen. Here we go. Born in Blue Island, then a Highland. Let's try that one more time. It's my first day. Born in Blue Island, then a Highland Park nerd. Got my degree, or they say fear the bird. A survivor from both the forest and moon. I keep stepping things up when Dan plays a tune. It was a tough one. It was a good one. It was tough today. Born in Blue Island, then a Highland Park nerd. Got my degree where they say fear the bird. A survivor from both the forest and moon. I keep stepping things up when Dan plays a tune. Who is the Chicago personality for free Blackhawks tickets from me and your friends at Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing? First correct caller, 312-981-7200. And the winner also gets qualified for season tickets next year, thanks to the fine people at Four Seasons.
Got it.
Need it one more time? Yeah? Okay. Born in Blue Island, then a Highland Park nerd. Got my degree where they say fear the bird. A survivor from both the forest and moon. I keep stepping things up when Dan plays a tune. Who is it? Let's go to Amy. Good morning, Amy.
Hello.
Amy, could you sound less thrilled to be on the show?
No, I'm thrilled.
All right, that's good. It's better. Where are you going this morning?
To work in Des Plaines.
Yeah, what do you do there?
I'm a dental assistant.
Yeah. How are people's mouths? Are they okay?
They're okay.
How'd you get into the biz?
I just was looking for a job after high school, and my dentist was looking for an assistant.
Well, I think dental assistant, I respect that. I couldn't be living in people's mouths. I respect it. I got to get to the dentist. If I open my mouth now, is it possible you could give me an exam?
Sure. Everything looks great.
Thank you very much. All right. Who is it? I just gave it to you. Who is it? What's the answer to the riddle?
Gary Sinise.
Very impressive. Yes. Congratulations.
Thank you.
What was the key? What got it for you?
I don't know. It was a guess.
It was your collective wisdom.
Yes.
I have tickets for you to see the Blackhawks and the Flyers Wednesday, November 1st. It's next Wednesday night. And again, you're entered to win four season tickets for next year. You been to a Hawks game this year yet?
I have. It's great.
All right. If you're a nutty Hawk fan like the rest of us, this is a good night for you. And who are you going to bring to the game?
Probably my boyfriend.
We'll see how he behaves between now and then.
That's right.
Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing for all the right reasons. Four Seasons. See him online at FourSeasonsHeatingCooling.com. And thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Don't hang up. 7:32, almost 7:33. We'll get to the big story. Is it next? We'll come back. And then John Feinstein's here about his new book, which is as good as anything he's ever written, as far as I'm concerned. And that's a high bar. Next on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Made everybody look at in practice yesterday, I've heard.
And he's made one here to give the Americans just a little hope. With his third here, all square in this match.
79 yards.
Can he pull it back? Yes, he does. Yes, he does. How about it?
Two putts. We're going to win the Ryder Cup. And Ryan Moore wins 16, 17, and 18.
And think about that. Ryan Moore, a first-timer. Lee Westwood is playing in his 10th straight Ryder Cup. And the celebration is on.
You don't have to be a golf nerd to remember the 2016 Ryder Cup. For a number of reasons, as our old friend John Feinstein's here. Congratulations on the first major. I meant what I said. I think it's one of the best things you've done.
Well, thanks, Steve. It was certainly one of the most fun books that I've ever written. I spent a solid year interviewing all the players and captains leading up to the Ryder Cup so that you know how I try to write. I try to take people inside places they can't go. And it was great because Rory McIlroy, yesterday was the pub date, and Rory is a wonderful guy. And he tweeted yesterday that, because I gave him an advanced copy of the book, that reading it, he felt like he was in both team rooms. And I don't think you get a higher compliment than that, at least for me, from a player. And I'd wanted to do a Ryder Cup book for years. And really, when I knew I was going to do it, was after Medina. Because after that American meltdown on Sunday, everything changed in terms of Tom Watson was made the captain for 2014, and then came the task force after the Mickelson-Watson meltdown over at Glen Eagles. And I said, this is the perfect storm.
You make a point in the book, several points in the books, in talking about the Watson-Mickelson relationship. And I would say, in general, sports media wrote it off as a generational thing. I think there was more than that going on.
Oh, there was more than that. I know them both well. I wrote a book on Tom's caddy, Bruce Edwards, who died of ALS years ago. And Tom and I run a charity golf tournament together in his name. So I know Tom very well. And I've known Phil since he was a rookie on tour. We were rookies together. Right. I did A Good Walk Spoiled the same year he was
a
rookie.
By the way, if you love golf, the best golf book ever written.
Well, thank you.
A Good
you.
Walk Spoiled.
Thank
golf.
You. But so I know them both well. It's a difference in personalities. And a lot of it has to do with that each thinks he's right on everything.
Sure.
Mickelson's never been wrong.
Two Rams Watson's on top of the mountain.
Wrong. Yeah, exactly. And again, I have a bias here because I like Phil, but I'm close to Tom, so take that into account. But there were a couple things. When Mickelson went off at that press conference on Sunday, he made some legitimate points about players needing to have more input, yep. but you don't do it there
yeah, exactly.
right after the Europeans have kicked your butt. Right. That's not fair to the Europeans, for one thing. And the other thing is that Phil told me that the day Tom was named, he thought it was a mistake. So if you go in with that attitude, what are the chances that things are going to go well?
Yeah, the predisposition for that is wrong.
Exactly.
So obviously we all remember 2012 at Medina.
Yes.
And it looked like a lock, and it certainly wasn't, because the Euro started making stuff from Lake Avenue as opposed to putts that wouldn't normally.
And Rory McIlroy got a police escort up sidewalks so he could get there in time.
Interesting. He had a problem packing.
No, he had a problem with time zone.
Oh, that was
he
it.
Thought
that
he forgot was he was it. In the central time
that
zone.
Was it. But the other thing that people forget about 2016 is the emotion of losing Arnold Palmer.
Yes.
What, within a week, right?
Well, he died the Sunday before the matches began.
So
everybody was en route to Hazeltine on Sunday night when the word came that Arnold Palmer had died. And it was emotional for both teams. But on the first tee Friday morning, they put Arnold Palmer's Ryder Cup bag from 1975 when he was the captain. And I got to tell you, that was very emotional for me, for anybody. And because he was one of those few guys in sports, he never had an enemy.
Right.
I mean, everybody liked Arnold Palmer,
right.
respected Arnold Palmer. And he kind of took every young golfer from Jack Nicklaus to Jordan Spieth under his wing. They all looked up to him. They all talked to him.
Anybody that was smart enough to ask.
Yeah. And Arnold was and that's a great point. Arnold told me a story years ago. He made the cut at Bay Hill, his tournament, in 1991 when he was 61. Which was remarkable in itself. Peter Jacobson went out and got a cake. And the next day, everybody playing in the locker room presented Arnold with a cake.
Mm-hmm.
And Arnold cried. And I said, why did you cry? And he said, because it meant that I still mattered to them.
How about that?
Yeah. He's an extraordinary
How could
guy.
He not, right?
Yeah, exactly. Right? But right. Arnold never took anything for granted.
Right.
He never assumed that he was Arnold Palmer, which is what made him so special.
I mean, you know him well. I only had a chance to talk with him a few times at balls with him, and one of the great thrills of my life. And just but every professional athlete, I don't care if it's a phenom at 18 that just made the NBA, doesn't know a thing about golf, he's the role model.
He should be.
He's
should
the guy. Be. This is the template of how you behave as a superstar athlete.
You know, that's a great point. And he told me a story years ago that the year Tiger Woods won the Masters by 1997
right.
when he's 21, Arnold played a practice round with him and then took him into the champions locker room to eat lunch, because at that point Tiger wasn't a champion. And during lunch, Tiger was complaining about how hard his life was. I have to sign autographs all the time. I have to do stuff with the sponsors. I have to deal with the media. And Arnold said, you know what, Tiger, you don't have to do any of that. And he said, what do you mean? He said, you want to be a normal 21-year-old? Give back the $50 million you've got
and go home.
You'll never have to sign another autograph again.
Right.
But if you're going to take the money, you need to take the responsibilities.
And I'm guessing, regardless of what anybody thinks of Tiger, it's one of the best conversations he ever had.
I hope so.
Yeah.
For Tiger's sake, I hope so. And you know what? One of the interesting things about the first major for me was Tiger was never into the Ryder Cup. You know, he sort of played it because he had to. He was only on one winning Ryder Cup team, 99 right. at Brookline. But he was totally into being the vice captain with Davis Love. In fact, Brant Snedeker told me that Tiger was calling all the players every day about who do you want to play with, what's the best matchup in foursomes, four ball.
So he took it really seriously. That's
good to the point where Snedeker finally said to him one day, Tiger, I got to go. You need a hobby.
I want to ask you about Snedeker because he's one of the more likable guys you could come across. And Patrick Reed, who played maybe the best golf of anybody
there. I walked with that match on Sunday.
Unbelievable.
It was as electric as anything I've ever seen in sports. And to show you how McIlroy gets it, all credit to Reed for winning, of course. But Rory and I are pretty good friends. I mean, he tweeted about the book.
Sure.
So I'm standing on the 11th tee. Reed's just gone one up. And as Rory walks on the tee, I'm over on the side near the ropes. And he walks over to me and grabs my arm. And he says, how cool is this?
How
I mean, he got it that this was special, win or lose. And that match, what happened on that eighth hole, I'm not sure I've ever seen anything like that.
Well, we'll talk more about that, too. It's all in the first major, the inside story of the 2016 Ryder Cup. If you're watching online now, there's the book. It's John Feinstein. And I got to get Dave in here in a second, too, because Dave says he can out-hit you. Nowhere near enough time to do this justice, but John Feinstein's here, a New York Times bestselling author of Good Walk Spoiled, The Legends Club, and the inside story of the 2016 Ryder Cup, the first major. You know, one of the questions, John, that always comes up that's separate from the book, but Chicago's one of the great golf towns in America, and we have, since the Western Open became the BMW, we don't get anything by way of a regular tour stop. It's ridiculous, and I took it up with the previous commissioner. I haven't spoken to the new commissioner about it. Is that ever going to change?
I would hope so. I mean, I think it's ridiculous that they only play a PGA Tour event here once every 3 years, basically, when they go to Conway Farms. And the Ryder Cup, of course, was at Medina back in 2012. I think they'll get another PGA here sometime in the near future. But I don't get it. I mean, if you want to come to the Midwest, I mean, all these, the USGA, PGA Tour, PGA of America, we want to be in the Midwest because so many of the great courses are in the East.
Yeah.
We need Midwestern sites. Well, where would you go first? You go to Chicago.
Right.
Now, Hazeltine's a really good venue and did a great job with the Ryder Cup, and the fans there were unbelievable. But the Ryder Cup here was unreal. The crowds were fantastic.
Bananas.
They got quiet on Sunday.
Had to.
Yeah.
But everybody got bananas. Dave?
How difficult, John, is it for these players to transition from playing as individuals and then, even though they've all competed in team play in the past, but to get back to that?
It's a good question. It's very hard. It's very hard because basically they only do it once every 2 years. I mean, the President's Cup, but nobody cares about the President's Cup.
Right.
So, and in fact, for a long time, that was one of the big problems for the U.S. was that Tiger and Phil didn't get along. They're the leaders of the team and they don't speak to one another. Hal Sutton tried to put them together in 2004. They lost both matches.
Yep.
And they ranked 1 and 2 in the world at the time. So, but one of the big differences at Hazeltine was because there were some new younger players, Jordan Spieth, Ricky Fowler, guys like that, who didn't have all the scar tissue. And Tiger and Phil were now at least getting along because, as I said, Tiger was so into being a vice captain and trying to help out. So the team room was different. And the giveaway, the dead giveaway to me was all the players told me nobody played ping pong. It used to be they played ping pong all the time because that was the only way they could get along. They had nothing to talk to each other about.
Right.
This team was truly bonded, and nobody played ping pong. There were two ping pong tables in there. They didn't use them all week.
How about that?
Do they respect the captaincies?
Depending on the captain. Certainly they respect Davis. Davis Love is as well-liked as anybody in golf. And every player told me that after the meltdown here at Medina, they were all in tears, even Tiger Woods, because they felt they'd let Davis down by the way they played on Sunday. And that was one of the reasons they were so happy when they went. I'll tell you a quick great story. Davis made the winning putt in 93 at his first Ryder Cup to clinch it. And he never got the golf ball because he was mobbed and he never got a chance to take the ball out of the cup and never saw it. When Ryan Moore clinched the Ryder Cup for the U.S., Davis went over, picked up the ball and said, Ryan, you should have this because this was a great moment in your life and I didn't get to keep
mine. How cool is that?
And Ryan Moore said, no, Captain, I want you to have
it.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, that's great.
That's how beloved he is.
No time is to do it justice, as I said, but Ryan Moore's story is in here. There's a guy you feel like could win 5 or 6 in a row, and then he disappears.
Yep.
Brant Snedeker, maybe one of the most underrated guys, period, and just a great guy. Matt Kuchar had some great locker room stuff.
Matt Kuchar is
detail
sneaky
here in the book.
Funny. I mean, he really is.
But, again, if you love golf, it's an easy one. But if you don't, this book reads for the non-golf fan as well. I think you're really going to like it.
Well, thank you, Steve. And I've always said my books are about people.
Yeah.
And they just happen to play golf or basketball or coach basketball, whatever. And I think this book is, he said modestly, is an example of that.
No, I think you're right. John Feinstein. He's working on his next 12 right now. the first major, the inside story of the 2016 Ryder Cup. Good to see you as
Thanks,
always.
Thanks, Steve. Good to see you guys.
Back with the news next on 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me, kiss me.
Live from Channel 9, Dean Richards standing by, and in just a moment, Mike Toomey will join us. Mike is far too valuable to stray too far from the set for long, but Mike will be on our Friday night stand-up show at Zany's in St. Charles. John DeCosta, me, Mike Toomey, 8 o'clock Friday night.
What are you saying, that I am...
You're completely expendable.
And that I can be away from
disposable is the word we're looking for.
Just wanted to check.
But before we go any further, we note with sadness the passing of Benson. Robert Guillaume.
Yes.
How old was he?
He was 89.
That's a pretty good run, isn't it?
That's a pretty good run. That's, yeah. Sure. He had been battling prostate cancer for quite a few years and died peacefully at his home with his family around him. You'll remember that Benson, he had a very long career before... Benson, the character that he created for the TV series Soap. Remember, he was a...
Oh, that was a spinoff. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, he was a side character on Soap.
Yeah, yeah.
And then got his own series where he was not... He went from being butler to assistant to the governor to state budget director and finally lieutenant governor on that series. And he was the first African-American performer to win an Emmy Award for best actor in a comedy.
I didn't know that either.
I didn't
know.
Now,
was he a stage guy mostly before that?
He mostly was a stage guy before that. And after Benson, after Sports Night, remember he was on Sports Night.
Oh, that's right.
For quite a while. He went back to Broadway, appeared in Guys and Dolls. He appeared in Phantom of the Opera. He was a very formidable stage performer as well. And many people will remember him as the voice of Rafiki in the animated version of The Lion King.
Wait, I thought that was you.
I thought it was you.
Well, who knew?
I thought it was you. Because when you think monkeys running around in the jungle naked, you think, well, you, Steve you, must have done that role.
Yeah, I mean, that's born to play. I mean, come on, please. All right, so here's what we'll do. We'll come back, we'll say hi to Mr. Toomey, and tell you about the show Friday night. Also,
he's standing by. Mike is standing by.
Yeah, I know. I'm just trying to make it really exciting for the listeners.
Apparently he's so invaluable.
He's invaluable. You know, me.
Not so much.
Yeah. Kid Rock news, Mark Wahlberg news, Paul Walker news, Harvey Weinstein news. Oh, good. And a new TV deal for the Kardashians. Thank God they're not going to have to go hungry. More money for the Kardashians.
Hey, those facelifts don't come cheap.
That's just so great. And honestly, if you're out there now and you haven't considered a sex tape for your children that you promote to create a career in an industry.
Don't say that.
Well, that's kind of what happened.
All right.
It's 8:19. More of Dean in just a second. Let's get your traffic update. Jen DeSalvo here with it. What do you got?
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richards, the entertainment editor.
Jen's filling in for Andrea, who is out with Katy Perry. They're still up after last night's concert. Or in for Mary, I should say. I said Andrea. You're doing all the jobs this morning, Jen.
I'm the only female right now. I'll do it all.
Ryan will be in for Andrea here in a couple of minutes. Mary, where's Mary? Mary's visiting the grandbaby? Is that the deal?
I don't know. I think that she's climbing mountains and spelunking. And
oh, she's spelunking. Well, we don't hear that as an excuse every day. Dean's here.
And I'm spelunking right now, too.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Well, you should see a doctor. And who's our special guest today, Dean?
He is a regular here on the WGN-TV Morning News, the announcer in our 9 o'clock show, but the provider of many laughs for many years, and one of the funniest stand-up comedians that there is, Mike Toomey.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
How are you?
Thank you for that lovely introduction.
Yes. But you insist on that any room you walk into, don't you?
Yes, I do. It's pre-written. It's posted in many different places in this building.
Michael hand out cards to people prior to entering a room and just said, just say this.
Okay, can I offer up my favorite Robert Guillaume role?
Sure.
The remake of The Kid from Left Field. I think it was in 1979. Remember that? That was a movie they made in the 50s. And Robert Guillaume was the ex-ball player, and Gary Coleman was his son who managed the San Diego Padres.
Wow.
Remember that movie?
I don't even remember that premise for that movie. Well, it was a remake, you said?
It was the original Kid from Left Field was made in the 50s.
Wow.
But this one, Robert Guillaume was like an ex-player, but he's relegated. This is the worst. He was relegated to being a vendor. Like, he used to play for the team.
Wow.
And now he's... Wow. Selling hot dogs. Wow. And people are like, hey, you look familiar. Didn't you used to play third? Like 10 years ago, you were the third base. No, that's somebody else. I'm a vendor.
Well, but this is a true story, Dave, I believe.
Would you do that? Like, why wouldn't you just work anywhere but there?
Yeah, you would think you'd get another job. Ron Santo, when he owned the pizza place, did he deliver pizzas?
I think he did. Yeah. Ron Santo pizza. Yeah.
He came to your door when you had delivery. It was Ron Santo.
If the regular delivery guy wasn't available.
Yeah. It's like, honey, Ron Santo's at the door. Did you order a pizza?
Oh, boy. That was when the guys had to have other jobs. Well, Dean, Friday night, Mike Toomey will be on display, as only we can put him on display, at the Zanies in St. Charles at Pheasant Run. And you're not kidding when you say this. It's a fun, Mike, am I right about this? Aren't you the funniest stand-up comic I've ever seen?
Well, I don't know about that. A lot of people.
Well,
say
let me check
it.
With
I
Dean.
That's what I.
Dean, isn't it true that Mike's the funniest stand-up comic
yes,
I've ever seen?
That is exactly what you told me to say.
Since you had your memory wiped out.
Clean. Here's how you get tickets. You go to Zanies.com. It's Friday night at 8. Now, if you're not available Friday night at 8, you'll regret it, but you have an opportunity to come see us at Zanies Rosemont Saturday at 4, where Tim Cavanaugh and I will be there in your traditional 4 o'clock show.
Will Mike be on before or after you?
Oh, I don't follow Mike.
Oh, come on.
Mike is closing. Yes, yes.
Just so I know what time to get there.
Yes. Yeah, you know what? Wait outside in the car, and I'll text you when I'm done.
Okay, perfect.
This is probably a good time to make sure we don't wear the same Halloween costume.
That's very true.
What are you wearing?
I'm torn right now, but I think I'm leaning towards the mom from the Big Valley.
Good one.
Yeah,
yes.
Barbara Sanders.
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, that was close because I was going to be sexy mom from the Big Valley.
It is
a big seller.
It is an adult holiday now, isn't it?
Yep. Yeah.
That's why we're doing the 4 o'clock show on Saturday, as far as you know. So you have a chance to go to your parties and do your trick-or-treating stuff Saturday night. Because we're thoughtful like
sure.
that. All right, so Mike, feel free to chime in on any more of these important items.
Where was this show again?
The Friday night one is Pheasant Run.
Pheasant Run.
In St. Charles. The Saturday is Rosemont Zanies. But if you want to see Mike Toomey, you're going to want to see him Friday night, 8 o'clock at Pheasant Run. Zanies.com. Kid Rock's not running for Senate?
He announced yesterday that what he is now saying was a hoax. That he never intended on running for Senate. He made that announcement official yesterday, even though he had Kid Rock for Senate lawn cards made, even though he had a Kid Rock for Senate website set up. He says that he was shocked that anybody thought that this was real, even though he went ahead and did...
Well,
did all of that.
Good. Does he know who's in the White House? It seems like he visited him.
That's why it seemed perfectly feasible to me that Kid Rock might run for U.S. Senate for the state of Michigan. So anyone listening in Michigan, you're safe.
At least for now. Have you worked Kid Rock into your act, Mike?
No, I have not. But listening to this, I would just say there's no chance of him running because how would he stand a chance of defeating Tony DeFranco in the primary?
That's a very good point.
He's the incumbent. I mean, you can't rock Tony DeFranco out of that.
No, listen, that's a pull you're not going to get from just anywhere.
It's a love beat.
DeFranco.
Yeah.
I don't understand in this Mark Wahlberg story.
He was in Chicago this past Friday. He was appearing at the UIC Pavilion with Cardinal Blaise Supich.
Uh-huh.
It was an event that about 1,000 people attended. It was a pretty well-attended event. And designed to bring young people to the Catholic Church. So he sat down for a Cardinal Blaise Supich A-list interview with Mark Wahlberg, and they talked about a lot of things, but the Cardinal asked him if he ever prayed for forgiveness for any of his movies, and without blinking an eye, he said that Boogie Nights is right at the top of his list, in which he played porn star Dirk Diggler. Remember that movie?
Yeah, vaguely. Because here's the thing, that movie is widely regarded as one of the best movies ever made by by an awful lot of critics and an awful lot of people.
Yeah, it's a great movie. I mean, maybe he regrets playing a porn star. Maybe he regrets some of the things that he had to do.
Was he cardinal shamed at that moment? Do we know?
Maybe. That could be a little intimidating if you've got, you know, the cardinal asking you if you do, are you praying
young
for
man, what have you prayed for?
That you've done. I mean, so apparently Ted was perfectly okay.
That's one I would have gone with. It's exactly what I thought.
Yeah, when you've got a little, you know, stuffed teddy bear, well, doing some of the things the stuffed teddy bear did in that movie. But hey, you know what? He says he hopes that God is a movie fan and also forgiving, that he's made some very poor choices in his past. There he was referencing troubled adolescence. He was in a lot of trouble as a kid. Yeah, he even spent time in jail.
Yeah, in a different world, he'd still be in jail. Mike Toomey, other than Robert Guillaume, your favorite movie of all time?
Plan 9 from Outer Space.
Oh, the acting in that movie.
Because it's that time of year again. Bela Lugosi's birthday was last week. And I know you're a big fan of Bela Lugosi. I know Dean is.
Sure.
We were talking last week about a radio show that he did with Abbott and Costello, where the show all built to this punchline, and he's holding the script, and as we know, his English wasn't great. And the line was, Abbott and Costello were like, "Are you afraid of the police because of the crimes you committed?" And they keep saying, "No, why is he not afraid of the police?" And then the line is, "Well, I just remembered I left my car parked in a one-hour zone, and you know how those Los Angeles cops." That's the joke, right?
Okay.
But when he's reading the script, he goes, "Hey, just remembered, left my car parked in one-hour zone. You know those Los Angeles cops." And you can just hear like a collective, like, everybody always go, "Wait, what?"
Yeah, right.
That was the punch. That's how the show ended. What?
Good night, everybody.
You don't get a second chance on live radio.
On that note, Mike and I talk about this every once in a while. This Johnny Depp movie, Ed Wood, about the making of Plan 9.
Yeah.
The great Martin Landau as Bela Lugosi. And some of the great scenes. So if you want to understand Bela Lugosi a little better, watch that Johnny Depp movie, Ed Wood. You'll get some pretty good laughs out of that one.
Specifically, go to YouTube and type in sidekick. Sidekick? Karloff? That's as far as I can go with that.
Yeah, and the rest of it, you've been warned.
Yes.
Dean will have more on Paul Walker's story and more on the Harvey Weinstein story. But, Dean, we have to wrap at this. The Kardashians are getting more money?
Thank goodness, Steve, that they have signed a new deal with the E! Network. It's a new 3-year deal, and they will be paid $150 million to keep that going. Excuse me, it's a 5-year deal. That'll keep the show, thank goodness, on the air for another half a decade.
Five more years of the Kardashians.
That's correct.
Yeah,
that is correct. 5 more years, and they get $150 million.
That's fantastic news. And it's all thanks to Kim. It's all thanks to Kim and a little video from 10 years ago.
You know, Kris Jenner negotiated that deal.
Well, she gets 10%.
She gets 10% of that. She gets $15 million for negotiating the deal for her daughters.
It's a beautiful story. It's a beautiful American
story.
It's a
lovely family story. It's like the Waltons.
Good for those kids.
Don't you guys think it'd be good just to have a camera in like a regular family's house, like the Smith house? Just nothing much happens. Just to see if that's a reality show hit. Or does it have to be people like the Kardashians sitting around talking about how miserable their 1% life is? Is that what has to work? All right, and we'll be back.
That's why you're the new Andy Rooney, Steve.
Wouldn't that be something if there was just a camera in an average person's house?
Coming back, the Irish potato famine controversy. We'll get back with that.
And they all said goodnight and turned out their lights.
All right, it's a great Mike Toomey, and I'm telling you, don't be a fool. Come out Friday night. I don't care if you don't like DeCoste or me. You're going to love Mike Toomey, and frankly, you'll like us as well. It's going to be fun, funny, not stuff you're going to hear here every day, and it's 8 o'clock Friday night at Zanies at Pheasant Run, zanies.com. And thank you, Mike, for doing that. Dean, thank you for everything you've done in your career.
Thank you very much for everything. I cannot thank you enough. I'm going to get $150 million for you.
That's great. I get 10%. Back with the big story in a moment on 720 WGN. Hey, 45, update the traffic in a second. Yesterday, pretty remarkable day that shouldn't just pass and be blown off. The good news is the President of the United States has really stepped up this morning, and he's focusing on his job and pushing. Oh, no. I'm kidding. He's tweeting. President Donald Trump responding to Bob Corker going after him yesterday and Jeff Flake. The reason Flake and Corker dropped out of the Senate race is simple. They had zero chance of being elected. Now act so hurt and wounded. Nothing they said was about being hurt and wounded. They both said was true. That's probably the part that bothers you, having the known allergy to the truth that you have, Mr. President. Bob Corker did about a million interviews yesterday, but Manu Raju from CNN should get credit for probably getting the best stuff out of him. The guys at Good Morning America did as well. Corker blasted Trump on foreign policy on Good Morning America, which sort of got the whole thing rolling yesterday. Keep in mind our three co-equal branches of government. The guys in Congress are supposed to figure out what the legislation is, and then the president's supposed to sign it. That's how it should work. Here's Corker.
When you look at the fact that we've got this issue in North Korea, and the president continues to kneecap his diplomatic representative, the Secretary of State, and really move him away from successful diplomatic negotiations with China, which is key to this, you're taking us on a path to combat. And so, you know, I want to support these efforts that are underway. The president undermines our Secretary of State, raises tensions in the area by virtue of the tweets that he sends out. And I would just like for him to leave it to the professionals for a while and see if we can do something that's constructive for our country, the region, and the world.
Doesn't sound whiny to me. Seems like a fair idea. And keep in mind, Corker, even though he said he won't rerun for Senate in Tennessee, will be around till January of 2019. And Trump needs his votes, though I'm not sure he understands how a bill becomes a bill. Trump then jumped on Twitter to insult the senator from Tennessee, again, a vote that he needs, saying that he begged me to endorse him, and I wouldn't do it. Bob Corker is here to tell you his truth.
So, I mean, on the Iran deal, everybody knows the role I played there, and they're working with me, interestingly, right now on tax reform. I made the deal with Toomey that, you know, has allowed that to go forward. Obviously, I want to make sure it's done properly, but... And then everything else, I mean, four times he encouraged me to run and told me he would endorse me. So I don't know. It's amazing. Much of what he says is untrue.
Yes, I remember when Spike Odell left here and I was offered the morning show here for what still remains the worst contract offer I've ever had in my life. And then several more offers were made. And then I continued to turn them down. And it was presented as I was begging for the job. Lies are lies. Lies have to be called out as lies. You know, there's a reason that the people that tried to destroy the Tribune Company no longer run the Tribune Company. They were really bad at it. The guy running the United States of America, at least in title, is the President of the United States. He lies every day. It has to matter. And that's what Corker and Flake were commenting on yesterday. I wish Corker would use the word lies a little more often, but he did come close. Here's that.
Unfortunately, I think world leaders are very aware that much of what he says is untrue. Certainly people here are, because these things are provably untrue. I mean, they're just factually incorrect, and people know the difference. So I don't know why he lowers himself to such a low, low standard and debases our country in the way that he does, but he does. And it's just not me to, we don't do tweets like that. We've responded twice to, again, untruth, but, you know, it's unfortunate that our nation finds itself in this place.
That's what made yesterday so amazing. That's the Republican senator from Tennessee who supported Donald Trump initially.
Is the president of the United States a liar?
The president has great difficulty with the truth on many issues.
Do you regret supporting him in the election?
Well, let's just put it this way. I would not do that again.
So you wouldn't support him again?
No way. Uh-huh. No way. No, I think that he's proven himself... unable to rise to the occasion. I think many of us, me included, have, you know, tried to, you know, I've intervened. I've had private dinner. You know, I've been with him on multiple occasions to try to, you know, create some kind of aspirational approach, if you will, to the way that he conducts himself. But I don't think that that's possible, and he's obviously not going to rise to the occasion as president.
He also talked about the debasement of the nation that Trump will be remembered for and the fact that he's clearly not a role model for kids. Jeff Flake, the esteemed senator from Arizona, who would not win his reelection in all likelihood because there's a presumption of apathy by everyone in Washington and Springfield and everywhere else that political power exists. We'll get some of Flake's sound from that amazing speech he made in the Senate when we come back. It's the Steve Cochran Show as we continue. Can I jump into this other sound here while we have a minute? Okay. Let's play a little bit of what Jeff Flake said. Jeff Flake is the junior senator from Illinois. You can't really be the senior senator when the other one's John McCain. And Jeff Flake yesterday took to the Senate floor about not seeking reelection. Listen.
It seems that our democracy is more defined by our discord and our dysfunction than by our own values and principles. Let me begin by noting a somewhat obvious point that these offices that we hold are not ours indefinitely. We're not here simply to mark time. Sustained incumbency is certainly not the point of seeking office. And there are times when we must risk our careers in favor of our principles. Now is such a time.
I said Illinois, obviously Arizona, Jeff Flake and John McCain. Jeff Flake talking about the fact that he has kids, he has grandkids. They deserve a future. Listen.
It is often said that children are watching. Well, they are. And what are we going to do about that? When the next generation asks us, why didn't you do something? Why didn't you speak up? What are we going to say? Mr. President, I rise today to say enough. We must dedicate ourselves to making sure that the anomalous never becomes the normal.
Will the Republicans turn into the party of hatred and divisiveness even more so than ever before? Does Steve Bannon already won? Well, Flake's concerned.
The impulse to scapegoat and belittle threatens to turn us into a fearful, backward-looking people. In the case of the Republican Party, those things also threaten to turn us into a fearful, backward-looking minority party. We were not made great as a country by indulging in or even exalting our worst impulses, turning against ourselves, glorifying in the things that divide us, and calling fake things true and true things fake.
Later, Flake did a few interviews, including, I think this is from Jake Tapper on CNN, where the question came up that people are saying that Trump broke him, and Trump in his 12-year-old tweet fashion taking credit for the same. Steve Bannon running around taking credit for the same, talking about we got another scalp. It's not about America. It's about them. Here's Flake's response.
Sarah Palin and Breitbart are saying things along the lines right now that Trump broke you. What's your response to that?
I'm still standing.
You're still standing.
There are other things in life than politics. And I can tell you when I would be broken is if I were to say that the path to reelection is to embrace the president's policies that I disagree with and condone his behavior, which nobody should condone. That would be a broken man who does that. So I feel good about where I am.
Is this the beginning of something bigger, or is it just a blip in the news cycle? Is it just a day? It needs to be the beginning of something bigger. Remember, everything in politics counts on your apathy, you not voting in primaries, you not caring enough, and then you wondering what happens. You have to be involved.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Friday night at Zanies. It's John DeCoste. It's me. It's Mike Toomey. It's 8 o'clock, and then Saturday, 4 o'clock before you go out trick-or-treating or go out to your parties. 4 o'clock in the afternoon at Zanies Rosemont with Tim Cavanaugh. Apparently, I'm all choked up about it. But it'll be a good time.
Do you need some water?
Fun shows.
Want some water?
Actually, I have my handy broadcaster water right here. Stand by.
Are you going to take any listeners with you from who come on Friday?
Mm-hmm.
Like have them take them home?
What do you mean, like a listener sleepover?
Yeah, a sleepover, and then they go with you on Saturday?
Break down in discussion groups about how the show went and all that?
That'd be great.
We probably should have offered a package tour ticket, right?
Now you're
talking. The tour jacket.
Yep.
The whole thing. And then the big New Year's Eve show coming up, oddly enough, on New Year's Eve.
Really? That's
yeah,
a good time?
Yeah, it seems like the right time to do it. And tickets on sale for that, too. We can give you details on that a little bit later on. Once again, in this 9 o'clock hour on CLTV and on 720 WGN, we get an opportunity to have you meet a couple of really interesting people who are doing a wonderful thing in representing something called Diamond Angels. Now, let me introduce you to our brand-new best friends here. First and foremost, Carolyn and Monica. Carolyn, you're one of the founders.
I am. We founded Diamond as a company in 2012 after the recession. We were looking for a way to help financial institutions better understand their female clients and to empower women to get out of the back seat and say, I don't understand money, and get in the driver's seat.
And here's the, where do you hear some of the statistics on this? But first, Monica, yes?
Yes.
Monica, how do you come to this?
So I come
this
to this
little party.
Yeah, it's been a great party at Diamond. So I'm a psychologist by background. And so when we started looking at the emotional financial security for women,
right,
at Diamond, we created the first quantitative measure of emotional financial security so that women can start to better understand how they're navigating their emotional relationship with money and what are the driving factors behind that. So at Diamond, we've come to really understand women and help them, empower them through the relationship with money.
Yeah, it's interesting because there is, it's not a genetic thing so much, I suppose, as an environmental thing, but the way you grew up with money.
That's right.
And your relationship to money. So who do you model as a woman growing up? Do you model how your mom handled the household finances? In other words, if mom just deferred it all to dad, are you more likely to do that?
Well, it's a lot of key money messages that women learn when they're young, and we all learn when we're young. So sometimes women are navigating the sort of their little girl and what their mother may have told them, but also what their father did and didn't tell them, as well as what happened at school and the fact that women may not have been encouraged to go into math and STEM programs, and society as a whole didn't necessarily support women having open conversations about money. So all those things she's still carrying with her. We often talk about women carrying all three relationships or tenses with them. So that's past, present, and future.
And personal finance is a big deal, obviously, because there's no reason, I don't care how happy your marriage is, there's no reason for you not to know where the money is. Things can happen any given day. But what you guys do is a larger piece of this, and Carolyn can speak to this. Yeah, there's a statistic in the notes from Diamond that stunned me about how much money women receive from a typical amount of investment that comes in versus how much men get. Because you assume this imbalance still goes on. You hope it's getting smaller. But give me the $2.90 story.
Yes. Today, women currently get $2.90 for every $100 a male founder or entrepreneur receives from either an angel investor or a VC. And Babson University's did a study called the Diana Project, and they took a look at why is the gap so huge. And what they found out in talking to male investors and VCs was that people invest in people that look like them. So as women, we decided that in order to change that number, we have to get more women, female investors, or women involved in the ecosystem of the startup community.
Well, explain the difference between a venture capitalist and an angel investor.
A venture capitalist tends to be funding entrepreneurial ventures in further rounds. An angel investor could be a family and friends round or an angel round. It's earlier seed money. The risk in an angel venture is much greater than in a VC venture. The failure rate is higher, except for women. And the reason is because we don't have access to early capital. We bootstrap so much longer that by the time we go into the market and look for either angel or VC money, we already have an ROI. We already are making money. We already have customers. So we're going actually to scale our businesses.
But I also know, I know a lot of VCs, and it's colder. It doesn't have the feel and the instinct that you combine with the science you're talking about, which I would think in the long run, though the risk may be higher, the success rate should be higher for what you're doing.
It definitely is for women. It's much higher. And much to the boys' chagrin.
Oh, I don't doubt that at all. The psychology of this fascinates me as well. Once you have a startup, when you have a startup, those things we talk about, those things that are on you, those hang-ups you may have about money are still there. You may have a genius idea, but what do women need to do to take that genius idea and find Diamond or take it to the next level?
So from a founder perspective, a lot of women, it's resolving that emotional relationship with money so that you can make bigger and better
financial decisions as you're growing your organization from a startup perspective. But if you look at that future female funder, which are the women that we're hoping to engage in Diamond Angels to raise our campaign of $1.92 million to fund the gap for women, female founders in Chicago, those women were asking them to make a $1,000 contribution to stand up and say, this too is a part of my financial empowerment. Many women, when they go to the financial advisor, are discouraged against making an angel investment and becoming an angel investor. And so most of the traditional angel networks in Chicago tend to be rather male-led, male-dominated, and from that lens, as you stated, it's missing the science of how women approach money.
And there's a lot of money in this town.
Absolutely.
I don't mean that just as a flip comment. I mean money to invest. You look at what's going on over at 1871. What happened in 1892?
It's a good year, too.
In 1871. Or the nerdery in other places. But it's not all tech, is it?
No. In fact, if you look at female founders, they tend to solve problems. A perfect example would be Spanx, Sarah Blakely.
That's a great story.
Yeah, she's a billionaire today, and she owns her company in total.
But do I understand the story right? She just didn't like the way she felt in the clothes she was wearing, and she said there's got to be a better way and started messing around with it. Is that really how it came up?
That's my understanding.
How about that?
So simple.
From I want to feel better in this dress to $1 billion. That's not so bad.
And that's how women work.
Yeah, right? Problem solve.
It was white jeans, I think.
Oh, was that what it was?
She didn't like the way she looked in the back in white jeans.
Right. How about that? But there's a lot of women listening now who may have the great idea or maybe have some money.
Yes.
And we're going to try to marry the two. So we're going to come back and explain how that's all going to work. And you can explain to me why 1920 is a key piece of this. And Dave, write down all the dates because apparently I'm having trouble with years.
1892 was that, Steve?
Yeah, exactly. What happened in 1892?
Well, that was
the last time the Cubs won the World
Columbus,
Series. Before last, I don't know.
It's challenging times.
921. We also want to remind people if they want more information, they have to leave us for a second here. If they don't hear part two, how do they get a hold of you there? Or their organization? Where do you send them?
We're online. It's www.diamond.com. And it's not the jewel diamond. It's diamond, DYMYND.com for dynamic minds.
Very nice. Diamond. Go there online and find out more, too. We'll come back to more in a second. 921 and 720 WGN. We're talking about Diamond, DYMYND. Diamond. Did I spell that right? I did? Yeah, now I'm questioning everything. Dynamic Minds, angel investing for women to encourage women to do more of the same. What's the 1920 piece?
1920 came out of the Voting Rights Act. That's when white women won the right to vote.
Right.
And so we decided that 1920 would be a Vote Your Money campaign, and we're asking 1,920 women to contribute $1,000 each to collectively fund 20 female-led startups in Chicago and the Midwest.
And how do they do that?
They can go on to the Diamond site, go to Diamond Angels, click on Learn More, and you can make your donation. It's through PayPal, and we're very happy to...
Now, you'll take the boys' money as well, I hope.
Absolutely.
Right? But the encouraging women to get involved is more of the empowerment of women as well. Do they become instant silent investors as well, or do they become part of the organization at large?
They become part of the organization at large.
And, again, speak to the psychology of that, because if somebody is able to make a contribution, what does that do for the overall hope of the goal here?
Well, listen, the funding gap that we have in Chicago when it comes to the entrepreneurial community is two-sided. The first thing is that we know that male investor, as Carolyn mentioned before, is biased towards women. The other side is that female funders are not often in a position where they're encouraged to do those types of investments. So we need her to make a commitment to her. We often say investing in you is an investment in her. Making that $1,000 contribution is the commitment that women need to say, I'm going to go on this journey with Diamond Angels and learn about angel investing and all the different sides of it. And we're going to do it from the psychological perspective of helping you to empower your emotional relationship with money. We hope you'll become better investors overall. We hope that one day you'll become an angel investor here in Chicago. There's only 19% of women angel investors in the U.S. are actually female angel investors. And we think with all the dynamic women here in Chicago and the leaders here, the richness of the community, that Chicago can shine a really bright light on this issue.
I don't know if you guys want to talk about any projects you're currently involved with through this, but I mean, there's got to be a few you're really pumped about, right?
Well, we're always pumped about different ventures that women are doing. And basically, it's because when she starts a venture, because she's solving a problem, it has impact for all of us. And so we're very pumped about one woman here in Chicago who is looking at creating an Uber, a nanny Uber service. And she's on the South Side, and she's going to make it a much more strict driver protocol, and parents get to interview drivers, but it's solving the problem.
Wait, that's a cool idea.
Moms.
So you're talking about a woman, a service started by the particular woman that would be able to pick up the kids from something and bring them back, that type of thing? I mean, I don't want to give away too many deals on a developing project, but is that essentially the overview?
I think that's essentially the overview. I mean, that's the great thing about Chicago. Again, women are solving problems. We've also got relationships with all the female-led incubator spaces and programs here in Chicago. Miss Tech is a very formidable program. WeSTEM coming out of 1871. You've also got programs at Blue 1647, the 1919 Initiative, as well as Lift Up Lift. And that's what's really exciting about this project. We are going in with diverse women all together, everybody holding hands and saying, this is our commitment to close that funding gap, that this is unacceptable, $2.90.
It's ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
Before we run out of time here, one thing that I think is really important, I mean, we're talking about the fact that men have missed the message here in a big way for far too long, whether intentional or accidental, or just that whole thing, well, I need to take care of her. Women need to take care of themselves better as well and be better to each other. So what do you want to say to mothers and grandmothers who are listening, who've got that incredibly energetic teenager or young college student who's got a great idea, and maybe they're not sure if they should encourage her?
Oh, well, encourage and encourage on. The future of women in leadership is going to be far more dynamic than what we see in corporate America. Women are much more likely, and women of color, diverse women, much more likely to go and start an entrepreneurial initiative. And if you
That whole thing about I don't want her to get hurt. I don't want her to,
because
we got to encourage women to go out and take chances the same way we do for men.
That's exactly it. And when we take that chance, we're able to accomplish a lot more. As Carolyn said, we've got that return on investment for you. We can do it.
It's a cool idea. You guys are doing good stuff.
Thank you.
Sounds like you got a lot of partners, too, that want to play along.
Absolutely. The whole community wants to be part of this. And what we are doing actually is bridging the gap that existed in Chicago between the founders and the funders, and creating an ecosystem where everybody is welcome to participate.
Need more information? You want to contribute? You got a little cash? It's all good. Diamond Angels, is it .com or .org?
.com.
DiamondAngels.com. Don't forget the spelling. Dynamic Minds at DYMYND. DiamondAngels.com. You keep us up to date on what's happening.
Absolutely.
Nice to see you both.
Thank you so much.
9:31, big story next, 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Credit cards company's like, okay, you want to play with us? We'll play with you. Okay, the minimum payment now goes from 2% minimum payment to 4%.
Seems pretty upset.
Okay, so now you got a person that's barely hanging on. $20,000 to $30,000 with credit card debt at 2% is $400 to $600, right? It's manageable.
It's so angry.
Now you just, what do these morons do? They turn it into $800 to $1,200 a month. Who the hell can afford that?
Stop yelling at me.
So what do they have to do? They have to go out and take out another credit card to pay the credit cards off.
I promise you, I don't look for his fuse and light it. I really don't.
Take it easy, champ.
Maybe sit the next couple plays out. You know what I mean?
It's always funny. I don't care. That never gets old. 9:45, my friend David Hochberg's in studio. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are things at Pearl Mortgage?
Pearl Mortgage is unbelievably outstanding. Rates are up, but we're still busy.
And the reason you're still busy is because it's not just mortgages. It's not just refi.
Correct.
Debt reduction.
It's
helping out. You had some wacky doctor dentist program. You were cleaning teeth or something.
Yeah.
What was the doctor program?
100% financing for doctors.
Okay.
You have to qualify with credit, obviously.
Because people think, here's the thing, Dave. I don't know if you know this.
People think doctors are rich. It's never been less lucrative to be a doctor or a medical professional. So why wouldn't they need help with all the debt they're carrying out of medical school?
They graduate with $300,000 to $400,000 worth of medical bills. We're seeing attorneys graduating with the great thing about attorneys is they have $180,000 to $250,000 worth of student loan debt and a Mercedes payment or a BMW payment. So the first thing they do when they graduate is get the car.
The car.
They get the 500 or the C-Class.
Get the car and then call you and go, why can't I afford a house?
Yeah, it's student loan, BMW payment. Student loan, Mercedes payment.
I suppose as a law student, you could get out, sue the school that you owe the tuition to and get a settlement.
Absolutely. You can do whatever you want.
All right, so let's back it up to the core values here. Okay, so mortgage rates are up how much?
They're up 0.375 point since Monday. So we had a gentleman call us on Monday, and he was bidding us out against Chase and Bank of America, and he decided to go with us. So before our loan officer said, hey, can we have your Social Security number so we could run your credit and lock the rate? He's like, I'll call you. I'm hopping on a plane. I'll call you when I get off the plane. I'm like, bad move. He's not going to call you back till the next day. Lock it in. She's like, I can't lock it in. He didn't give me his Social Security number. Tuesday comes. We call him back. The rate was up 0.25 point. So now he's all upset, accusing us of bait and switch. And I'm like, listen, Spartacus, before you get on the plane, give us your Social Security number, birth date, so we can run your credit, so we can lock the rate.
I mean,
we're really good at a lot of things, but trying to guess eight digits into the Social Security number, if the clouds are rolling in,
and Tom Skilling says it's going to rain. Get an umbrella.
Right. Stay indoors.
Right. So don't count on the fact that you can just get on a plane, go away, and the next day your rate's going to be the same.
Or I'll call you when I land. Listen, how long does it take to say eight digits?
Yeah.
Okay.
By the way, it's nine, but don't.
Is it nine?
About it. Yeah. Yeah.
No. Yeah, it is nine.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, whatever
it is.
Yeah,
smarter
nine.
Than I look.
Yeah, you are.
All right. So the other thing I think it's important that people know, you're still counting.
Nine.
You're
it
doing a
nine.
Census.
I just want to make sure.
Maybe you have eight. I have all nine.
Oh, yeah. I'm a little older than you.
So here's the thing that I think people need to understand, because when I do your commercials on the show, or anybody does on the station, by the way, thank you. The people that I talk about are real people.
Yeah.
Like, who's this Gloria woman I brought up this morning?
It's funny. I was driving on the inbound Edens. I should say crawling in on the inbound Edens in the Kennedy this morning, and I called Gloria. She closed on her house. As you were reading her live read, she had called me on Monday or Tuesday or something a couple of days ago. I haven't been able to get back to her, so I called her. That was a lady who did the Permaseal sewer check.
They found one of your partners.
One of our partners, Permaseal is a great company. They found a root ball, which the seller had to route out. Which if she would have bought the house with the root ball, and eventually there's going to be challenges in the sewer line. And guess who's going to have to dig up the front, side, or backyard, depending upon where the sewer line is. The owner of the house. So that saved her anywhere from $5,000 to $15,000 to $20,000, depending upon how extensive.
Well, but this is why I think it's important that people understand rates are what they are.
Sure.
You can't determine rates.
Can't control it.
But it's the partners you have, the service you provide, the closing costs you can deliver, and the people that work for you.
Yeah, and the realtor partners also. We have a great group of realtors. JC Restoration is another one of our partners. Permaseal, we got Builder Supply Outlet, Tom Janke, the fine people.
Great guy.
Great guy. We got Mega Pros Joe at Mega Pros Home Improvements, another sponsor of the station. It's great to team up with a group of professionals that when you give out a name, you don't have to look over your shoulder. You know it's done. You know that they're going to take care of them, and you know that you can move on with the transaction. And we've got great staff, too. 14 licensed loan officers. Gloria here had an approved loan before she went shopping. So when she went shopping and bought this house, she was bidding against three other bidders for this home, but she had an approval instead of a worthless pre-approval. So her offer was jumped to the front of the line, and she got the house over the other three bidders because she had an approval, not a pre-approval. And the people listened to WGN that sold her the house and had heard the ads and said, okay, let's see.
And the core difference there is, if I know how much I can actually spend, we're going to save a lot of time.
Well, the core difference is the loan's been underwritten by an underwriter. It hasn't been put through a computer. Okay, an underwriter has looked at your loan.
Which means it's ready to go.
It's ready to go. I need an appraisal, maybe updated bank statements, maybe updated pay stubs, maybe updated letter of explanations or something like that. And we could close quick, which we did. We closed within a couple, 3 weeks. And we were able to do that because we had it already approved at the lender, and we were able to move quick. It trumps every single pre-approval out there. And unless you have in-house underwriting, which most lenders that advertise on the station don't have, you can't offer what we offer, which is a bona fide approval, not this ridiculous pre-approval where if it doesn't go through, we're going to give you $1,000 and the seller $1,000. That's great. Loan fell apart, but you get a grand, the seller gets a grand, and now you got to start at ground
at zero
again. It's right. Ridiculous.
Yeah. It's not bothering you at all, is it?
No, it doesn't. I see a therapist, and I'm fine, and I express and I work things out with her.
Is there a special division of therapy for mortgages?
Well, for me, there's an entire wing. Okay, so I've exceeded. Blue Cross Blue Shield has kicked me out of the
psychological. What are your top three annoyances? That's one of them. What are the other two?
Well, I think
I'm... Hold that thought. We're back with David Hochberg in just a moment.
Is it about loans or anything? Could it be anything?
It could be anything.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure.
How do people get a hold of you?
It's very simple. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. 312-751-1333.
Yes.
You could also go to WGNDavid.com.
Why, that is simple.
That is simple. And also, we're doing a bang-up job with Facebook on social media. We're posting stuff every single day. You go to David Hochberg of Pearl Mortgage, which I think there's going to be a link on your website that people could link over.
Sure.
We have videos. We have testimonials. We have articles. We have everything. So I'm putting my three thoughts together, and we'll be back after these messages.
More with the David Hochberg Show featuring Steve Cochran after this on CLTV and 720 WGN.
Our house is a very, very, very fine house.
David Hochberg's here from Pearl Mortgage. Bill and Wendy coming up here in a few. Three things that bug you the most.
Microphone not being on. There we go. When I'm on a live radio show. That's number one. No. Number one, when people... want to wait to lock in a rate and don't call you back like this guy did on Monday and then fires on us on Tuesday because he didn't call us when his plane landed because he didn't give us the information.
Right.
Number two is when we get loan estimates from other lenders that are untrue, right, have got ridiculously high closing costs, and then when you break it down but have got a low rate but ridiculously high closing costs.
That's bait and switch.
Well, that it's not bait and switch. It's just... It's just a different way.
Well, if they can't deliver it, it's bait and switch.
Well, it's bait and switch if they can't deliver it.
Yeah.
But if they jack up their closing costs to give you a lower rate,
yes,
okay, you're paying for it one way or the other. And if our closing costs are $900 to $1,000, and on sometimes this rocket mortgage thing where $3,000 lower than what they're quoting, you know, don't get caught up. Guess who's paying for all those ads at the gas station when you're pumping? Okay, you, the person pumping the gas. Okay, that frosts me.
Let me just check your blood pressure before you
I'm all right. I was on the cardio machine today. What's that thing? The elliptic machine?
Elliptical?
Yeah, I did one of those things for 40 minutes today. I'm fine. And then number three, when you're listening to the traffic and the traffic says, take the express lanes, and you get in the express lanes, and the express lanes aren't moving. So you got to get out of the express lanes in order to get back in the local lanes, because the local lanes are faster than the express lane. Nothing against Jen DeSalvo. I love her.
Yes, I will let you know when they're the not-so-express lanes.
Jen and I go way back. I'm just saying. Okay? When I get on the Edens.
Jen's a delight. I wouldn't
Jen's
have
wonderful.
You. I won't have you criticize Jen.
No, she's fantastic. Yeah. Is black hair or purple hair? What do we got?
I'm kind of blondish right now.
Okay, that's fantastic.
Me too.
Well, who isn't? So, you know, you get on over there by Tower, and you're thinking 23 minutes in, and it's an hour and 45.
How do you do it?
It throws your day off.
How do you do
it? I'm just saying. I'm like, I'm going to have a relaxing trip. I'm flying all the way in. I get to the junction. You know what also frosts me? The people that, like I'm waiting in line at the three-quarter of a mile sign to get on the express lane.
Yeah, good.
And these people are like, driving in the middle lane to get up front to cut in. That just fries me. So then my express lane experience is even worse because then I got to go local lanes and then I try to get into the express lane.
This is how road rage happens.
But I was calm because I was talking to Gloria.
Not you, them.
Of course, because they're not as calm as me on the road.
And by the way, it's not your highway, it's our highway.
I'm just
so when people are going around, driving wherever they want to get in front, it's just not fair to the others.
Right.
It's the same thing we learned in kindergarten.
I'm waiting patiently in the line.
put things back where you belong.
Right.
Don't cut in line.
They go in the middle lane, yes, and then they cut in.
Yes, yes.
So I'm just like, forget about it, right? Here, I'm sitting here 10 minutes. I'm not moving.
It's okay.
I'm okay.
There you go. Come on.
So that's number three. That's really number one, but I just thought of it after number two. Okay, thank you.
All right, what do you want? Give me the message you want to leave people with.
I want to leave people with, it's still a great time to refinance. We have a wonderful program. We have interest-only loans up to $15 million. Nobody else that advertises.
Is that a good idea?
It's a fantastic idea, especially with what Madigan's doing with our real estate
tax. But you better make the payments.
We got to make the payments. Listen, it's all about the monthly payment. I don't give a...
So you're not putting people into these loans like 2007, where a bunch of these clowns were putting people into interest-only loans that couldn't afford the house.
228, 327 subprime arms are all gone.
Yes.
Okay, these are 5-7, 10-year arms. Okay. You get a 10-year interest-only loan based upon a 30-year term or a 40-year term, so it turns into a 30-year fixed loan.
Right.
It adjusts after 30 years, right? 10 years interest-only loan, you're only paying down the principal during the first 5 years of your loan by 7%. Okay, so if you got an arm coming due and you're looking at what rates are today, guess what? An interest-only loan is a beautiful thing in order to keep your payments down.
Okay.
And if I ever go into another home, I'm putting myself into an interest-only loan because they're fantastic loans.
It allows you to have the cash you need to do the other things you need
to do. Exactly, and to pay for the real estate taxes that our government is jamming down our throats.
This is one of your more calm segments.
Yeah, you know what? It's a Wednesday. I usually down here on a Thursday. I think Wednesday is a better day.
Yeah, it's a better day for you. You're centered.
I'm centered.
It's David Hochberg at Pearl Mortgage. Again, how do we get a hold of you?
Very simple. 312-751-1333.
Or?
Have your 9-digit social security numbers ready. Or you could go to WGN David. Or you could go to David Hochberg of Pearl Mortgage. And if you submit a question of the week, which we've gotten tons of, and we select your question and we put it on Facebook, we will take you to a basketball game as my guest.
Is that right?
Yes.
Look at
I've
you.
I've got tickets. I've
You're
got
a generous
really good
guy.
Tickets. I'm a very generous guy. You want a hug, Bill?
Back with Bill and Wendy next.